On the 13th of April 2014, the Sunday Times published a number of articles exposing the manner in which English language schools in Ireland were operating. An undercover investigation had discovered the corruption and malpractice that was taking place in these schools on a daily basis, ranging from selling students courses that didn't exist to doctoring students' attendance records, enabling them to work longer than is legally allowed.
Out of those seven or eight schools, five of them, their staff agreed, yes, we can inflate people's attendance. Attendance is a big thing that we focused on. You know, under the rules, you have to have 80% attendance to keep your visas, but schools were turning a blind eye to this, you know, giving students their visa and letting them go absent to work full-time, either in the black market or full-time, legitimately.
Within days of the initial articles being published, some of these schools were raided by the Department of Justice and their abilities to issue visas to non-EEA students were suspended. The knock-on effect of this was language school closures and genuine students being left high and dry.
And then in the following week, we're back to the school and it was closed.
When we get there, there was a note on the door saying that the school was closed down.
I got here on the 1st of May and the school closed down on the 2nd.
The aim of this documentary is to delve into this issue, discover the effect of the closures on the students, find out how this happened, and see what the future holds for these so-called visa factories and for the English language industry in Ireland. No one can deny that Ireland, and especially Dublin, is becoming more and more cosmopolitan by the day, and many of the new faces that can be seen are international students who have come here to learn English. The English language industry in Ireland is of huge value to the economy, bringing in an estimated €800 million a year. So it came as quite a shock for many to learn about the malpractice taking place in a number of schools, resulting in the closures and risking massive damage to Ireland's reputation abroad as a study destination. Sunday Times journalist Mark Tye explains how it was initially uncovered.
Yeah, I suppose it all arose out of an article a colleague of mine did about, you know, Dublin's growing Brazilian community, and we got contacted by someone who worked in Millennium College, and they said, you know, there's so many scams here involved in getting these mainly Brazilians visas to work and study in Ireland. And she explained how, you know, in her school over 80% of the students would be Brazilian, and over 80% of them would not be genuine students. They'd show up for the first few weeks and then be gone. And I was kind of flabbergasted by this. You know, why aren't there checks on this? You know, obviously a visa to work in Ireland is a very valuable thing. So over 4 months then, we kind of worked on this, piecing it together. We started exploring other schools. We were tipped off that would be equally as bad. The more we looked into it, the more we heard that it wasn't just one rotten apple. It was a system-wide issue. We eventually decided that, you know, we'd need to send someone in undercover, which is something we do rare enough, but it's something you have to do where there's no other way of verifying what's a serious allegation of fraud, you know. So a Pakistani journalist based in Ireland, Faisal Mirza, agreed to pose and set himself up as an agent and went into seven or eight schools in and around Dublin. Out of those schools, five of them, their staff agreed, yes, we can inflate people's attendance. It wasn't in keeping with the rules. So this was schools with two or three classrooms, could have 600 students on the books and maybe one teacher. So it was completely unfair for the genuine schools, and it was fraud. So these people quite willingly said to our undercover reporter, yes, we'll give you fake attendance. And, you know, they didn't know our guy from off the street. We suspected it would be a lot easier than that even. But, you know, we had them banged to rights then, so it allowed us to do a big piece. And it kind of snowballed from there. The very next week, Department of Justice went into the five schools, suspended their licenses basically to issue new visas to foreign non-EU students. So very quickly, a kind of a domino effect, they all closed, citing financial problems of the suspensions. And as we got more and more information from the schools, we could show there was widespread fraud. Like in Eden, they were giving out fake attendance or course accreditation to Latvian women to so they could participate in sham marriages. They were helping their students cheat on master's courses from the Australian Institute of Business. In Millennium, they were issuing, they were getting visas for their own staff that didn't really work there. You know, it was just unbelievable the amount of different strokes that were being pulled by these various schools. So I think at the last count, it's 17 or 18 schools closed, you know, and each of them had their own unique issue, similar dodgy practice, what we would say simply, you know.
Both students and staff members were affected by the closures. Students lost large amounts of money, and staff members and teachers lost their jobs. Graham Gilligan, a staff member of the most high-profile school to close down, Eden College, talks via Skype about his experience of working there and when he realised what exactly was happening in the school.
So you were in Eden College, wasn't it?
I was indeed, Eden College. I started working there as an English teacher, you see.
Yeah.
Like after working as an English teacher for a couple of months, I have a big background in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So Fakir asked me if I would take over the job as marketing executive for the school, basically.
Yeah.
So of course, I mean, I didn't really know how bad the school was at the time because I was just an English teacher. And it's only really then when I started to move up the ranks, so to speak, I started to realise that there was something seriously wrong and illegal going on at the school, you know. So originally, I tried to talk to some of the upper management and tried to say to them, like, I mean, to give you an example, one day I was in the office with Fakir and he said to me, we're going to start promoting pathway programmes. Pathway programme is a programme that schools offer as a one-year springboard to get you into university.
Okay.
And I said to Fakir, who's going to teach this, you know? And he said, well, just don't worry about that, just sell it. And I said, so basically, like, you're effectively asking me to recruit students from a course that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we'll worry about all that, you know? And it was around then that I just decided, like, this is basically completely illegal what they're doing. And then I started to notice that attendance sheets were being doctored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember there was one situation when a load of students arrived from Venezuela to do one of the business courses that they were offering in the school, and there was no teacher there. There was no course.
Yeah.
And the Venezuelan students realized there was something seriously going wrong. But then Fakir called me to a meeting one day and he says, oh, Graham, we bought a school. The school is going to be called IBS, and you're going to market IBS and Eden College. I said, well, so Fakir, basically you're asking me, like, two schools are going to be competing against each other, like you own both schools. What's the logic behind that? And he says, well, what you do is you sell the expensive courses in Eden College, and if they say the course is too expensive, sell them IBS instead. And it was just all of these things that I started to notice that were going on. So I actually went, I called immigration. And I called A sales also, you know, and I was basically could lose my job from this. And I told A sales exactly what was going on. And again, there was nothing done about it, you know. So just everybody just completely decided to turn the other way. So, I mean, we all, like, there was a core of us who were really, really actively trying to you know, make regulatory bodies aware. And after months and months of just hitting brick walls, we just gave up on the thing, like, you know. And, like, I was fired because I was basically ruffling too many feathers, you know. And 2 years later,
it was still
open, you know. And Fakir Hossein employed Bat O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
I was very surprised that Bat O'Keefe, the former Minister of Education, so he would have been pushing Ireland as a destination for foreign students. And, you know, he was the president of Eden College, a school which was one of the worst schools we exposed in terms of the malpractice that was happening. Now, I don't think Bat O'Keefe was aware of what happened, but he was very much the face of Eden College, and he would have been in a lot of dialogue with Department of Justice. And you can see from some of the FOIs we did subsequently that, you know, Department of Justice stood back. They were aware of a lot of bad things happening in Eden, and they stood back from Eden because Bat was there, and they thought, you know, he's there to sort it out, but he wasn't able to do that, obviously, but and he hasn't come out and explained himself fully since. He's, you know, he doesn't return our calls. So that was, I thought, was a major thing. And like, he resigned as soon as he knew we were onto the story, but he was on a very healthy payment for doing one day a week.
I met with Kevin O'Sullivan, the head of immigration policy at INIS, Irish Naturalisation and Immigration Service, and also Sue Hackett, the manager of the Validation of English Language Education and Transnational Programmes in ACELS, the Accreditation and Coordination of English Language Services, to find out how schools were able to operate in such a way.
I'm head of immigration policy at INIS, and that covers national immigration policy and some of our EU involvement. So in relation to the student immigration situation and the English language closures, I suppose the first thing we should say is that the Department of Justice doesn't regulate language schools. What we do is we deal with the interaction of educational establishments, which includes language schools, but also includes the universities, the private colleges and the rest. And it regulates their interaction with the immigration system. So our role is about the immigration aspects of international education. And that really deals with students who are coming from third countries, or as we call them, non-EEA students, which means they're coming from outside the EU and from the associated countries, which is Norway, Switzerland, Iceland and Liechtenstein. So those are the countries that are in the EU extended family. Mm-hmm. Our involvement is really with the people who come from outside the EU, adult students who are coming here as migrants for the primary purpose of studying, but they also have some entitlement to work. And that's really what it gives rise to a lot of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Does INIS have any power in relation to closing down a school or recommending that a school would close down?
We can't close down a school as in telling somebody that they have to cease trading. So we can't shut down a business. What we can do is we can say that that school is no longer regarded as the basis for granting immigration permission. Now, what that means is that we will no longer give immigration permission to people who are attending that school. It doesn't necessarily mean that the school has to close. They may have EU students, and that's not our business. So if they have EU students, they can continue trading.
In what situations would you suspend their ability to accept non-EEA students?
The main one for us would be immigration compliance, because, again, that goes back to what our role is. But what we have suspended people for is immigration abuses. The reasons are people offer qualifications where the students are not registered with the parent body. So in other words, they can't actually do the exams. Poor attendance. If we find falsification of records, concealed ownership may well be another one. So it's really about the immigration compliance of the school. In some cases, they haven't reported that the students weren't attending. So if a college seems to be facilitating people getting immigration permission on the basis of being a student, but they're actually not really a student, that's the sort of grounds that we would be looking for.
Yeah.
But because of this factor, that you're selling an opportunity or buying an opportunity to come to Ireland and work, that distorts the market. Mm-hmm. And really, when you look at it, it's the employment aspect of it that gives rise to pretty much everything that goes wrong within the sector.
So they would have been maybe falsifying the attendance records to help students to go and work more hours than they were allowed to?
I wouldn't say in all cases that they were falsifying the records. In some cases, I think they were maybe turning a blind eye to the fact that maybe the students weren't turning up.
How are the working hours monitored? Are businesses aware of their visa restrictions? How do you know that they're not working more hours than they should?
You'd really only do that through an inspection by the Workplace Relations Commission if they happen to be investigating a business. Mm-hmm. The conditions should be well known. There's really no excuse for an employer to say that I didn't realise that the student could only work 20 hours a week. And as well as that, the student knows perfectly well what their rights and entitlements are. Mm-hmm.
So I suppose there is a level of trust that you have to put in the employer and the student to abide by the rules.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There is an element of trust. You employers do have responsibilities, as they have even when they're employing people other than students, and we expect them to meet those in relation to students in the same way as they would otherwise.
And could you just explain how the schools are monitored when you said you go in and you do an inspection for immigration purposes? What does that involve?
Well, you would go in and look at their record keeping. You'd look around the building, you look at the classrooms, you look at who's being taught. We would have details of certain students and we would look to see where they, what their attendance record was. So attendance records, the proper maintenance of attendance records is one of the most important things.
Okay, so the schools that closed down, had they had recent inspections before they closed down, or had they been operating in a illegal manner for a long time before it was noticed?
In the initial stage, some of the schools that closed were actually closed on the basis of inspections. There had been a Sunday Times undercover report which was followed up by inspections from here, and that led to a number of colleges being suspended from the register. And having been suspended, they closed. There were certain others where we found them to be unsatisfactory ourselves.
Would it be fair to say that if the Sunday Times investigation hadn't been carried out, that some of these schools could still be trading today?
I don't think so. I think because if they continued with their business model, it would have come to attention eventually, I think, or it would have just taken a bit longer, because what an investigative journalist has the capacity to do is they can do something that is not available to the state, and that's to go undercover. We can't do that. But yeah, I think we give credit where credit's due, is that the investigative report that the Sunday Times undertook did help the situation, and it accelerated, I think, maybe the closure of some businesses that certainly their continuation wasn't in the national interest.
First of all, Sue, could you just explain what ACELS is and what is its role?
It's a voluntary quality assurance scheme for ELT, English language teaching schools that wish to engage with it. And it's renewed every year.
What do the inspections involve?
There are two types of inspection. One is a pre-arranged inspection, which happens with the recognised schools every 3 years. And then there are the monitoring inspections.
Okay, and you said that the schools can renew every year, but they might not be inspected every year. It's just every 3 years. And why don't you inspect them if you're renewing their accreditation?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose not to overburden schools with inspections, because the inspection is a process. It takes longer. Although we actually visit the school for a day, there's a whole process around it.
Okay, so if eventually the school is refused, it can still continue operating with substandard quality?
Yes, I mean, the ACELS, as I said, is a voluntary scheme. It's not a policing mechanism. So in theory, anybody can set up a school. That's why we are always saying to learners, really check what kind of school you're dealing with. Where somebody buys a cheap course, there is a reason why it's cheap. Mm-hmm. And so it might be cheap, but it's not really value for money.
So would it be fair to say that it's difficult for ACELS to control the standard of quality in the English language industry in Ireland when your powers are so limited, whereas a school could be refused and told the standard's not good enough, but it can still operate and receive international students?
To some extent, yes, in the sense that ACELS is a voluntary scheme. Where the trouble has arisen in the past with unrecognised schools closing suddenly, for example, and students being kind of left at the door, those have been really around immigration policy issues.
Do you think if ASLs wasn't voluntary, or if you had more powers, to, say, for example, close down schools that didn't have a good enough quality? Do you think you could have avoided all the schools closing over the last couple of years?
I mean, we're a quality assurance body. We're not in the business of closing down schools. We're in the business of quality assuring. And hopefully, I mean, these quality assurance schemes are fundamentally based on trust, mutual trust. If that trust breaks down or isn't there on the part of all parties who are involved, there is an issue.
It seems that the English language industry has major trust issues. Many students trusted in Ireland and the industry to provide, on the most basic level, English classes, and for others, a new start, only to be let down hugely.
My name is Luan Silva, I'm from Brazil.
Okay, and which school did you choose?
Eden College.
And when did you come to Ireland?
I came to Ireland in January 2014.
How long were you studying before the school closed?
I studied 3 months in there.
3 months. And what happened with the school closing down? How did you find out? Did you have any idea?
We got to know nearly 1 month before.
Okay.
They were being investigated.
Yeah.
And there was some humor that they might close.
Okay.
But then it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then we kept studying. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they sent us 1 week home. And then in the following week, we back to the school and it was closed. No teacher, nobody there yet.
And you didn't receive any notification before this?
No.
Okay.
No certificate, anything from Eden College.
So what happened that day? Like, how did you feel when you arrived at the school when it was closed?
It's difficult to explain the feeling that we had there. We were desperate because mm-hmm. we were here for three months only, and we didn't know what to do, where yeah. we should go.
You had booked through an agency, so yeah. was the agency able to help you, or did anybody in Ireland help you?
No, and then in the day we got to the college and we find out that the college was closed, the people from this institution, ICOS, they were there explaining us what to do and with some options of college. Mm-hmm. But then as I came through an agency, the agents got all the students mm-hmm. and they proposed us to go to a different college.
Okay.
But what the agents did, they made us sign a contract
yeah.
saying that we were going to a different college, but after that they didn't have any responsibility about us.
Okay.
You know?
So they said, we'll put you into another school, but if something happens, it's not our problem.
Anymore, yeah.
Did you hear anything about the owner, where the owner went or anything like that?
No.
No?
Never. The only thing that happened after that, they had another school in the same build.
Yeah.
The IBS. IBS. Yeah. And it closed after 3 weeks, 1 month, because it was the same owner. And then because the school didn't have money, because the money which supports the school was the money from Eden mm-hmm. that was double price. Then I didn't know where he's gone.
I'm Marina. I'm from Brazil.
When did you decide to come to study in Ireland?
I decided in August 2013, but I actually came in May 2014.
Okay. How did you choose your school?
As I said, we decided in nearly 1 year before we actually came, and I did a spreadsheet with all the schools and all the agents. So I did like a SWOT, actually, analysis. And then I went to the Facebook groups of Brazilians who live in Ireland. So there I asked many questions of all the schools. And then I was between two schools, which I don't really remember the name, but one was 500 euros more expensive than the other. Mm-hmm. But then on the other one, that's the one that I chose. IBS, I have a friend working there. And then I chose that school.
And how long were you studying in the school before it closed down?
That's weird, because I got here on the 1st of May and the school closed down on the 2nd. So I haven't stood in the school.
So you never went there?
No, I just went there one day just to see the school because my friend worked there. So I was like, okay, I'm going to show you the school. And then on that same day, like 2 hours later, he discovered that he were fired just because the school was closing down. So it was quite awkward.
So what happened then?
I would say about 50 people there that had the same problem as me, who just arrived and then had this problem with this school. I mean, other school as well. So yeah. The agents, because I signed a contract in Brazil, they had to respect the Brazilian constitution that if you sell something and then I don't receive it, you have to give back the money or resolve it somehow.
Okay.
So the agents took a while, I would say about nearly a month to solve it out. We had many meetings with them and they moved us. Mm-hmm. So they just changed us, the school. If I had bought the school with the course directly with the school, I would just lose my money.
Okay.
Because that happened with many people that I know. But then, well, again, it was in a month, it was all sorted out. But I lose kind of a month of study. Maybe it would make a difference, maybe not.
Both Marina and Lewin were moved to other schools, but not everyone was as fortunate.
My name is Ligia. I'm from Brazil. I arrived here 2012, August.
August 2012. Yeah. Okay, so you've been here for...
4 years
now, yeah. Okay, yeah. And which school did you choose?
MEC.
MEC. So when did MEC close down?
I think it was March last year.
March last year, yeah. Okay. So when you first came to Ireland, did you study in MEC?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it was my third year.
Was it your third year in MEC?
Mm-hmm.
So you were happy enough to renew?
Yeah, because the teachers were really good.
Okay. Before the school closed down, were you worried that this might happen?
I was really worried because I seen that many other schools were closed already.
Mm-hmm.
But they ensured me that it was not going to happen.
What happened the day it closed? Did you get notification before that?
Yeah, nothing. When we get there, there was a note on the door saying that the school was closed down.
Really?
Yeah.
You arrived and the school was just closed.
Yeah.
Okay, and were there many students and teachers there at the time?
There was a lot of staff, yeah.
So they didn't know either?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think they did.
Okay, and how long had you been studying in MEC for the third time?
Yeah, so I was supposed to study for 6 months,
yeah.
And I studied for 4 months.
Okay, so you lost two months of course.
Yeah.
And how much money did you lose?
Like 400 euro, yeah.
And you didn't get any money back?
Nothing.
Nothing. And did you get transferred to another school?
No. If you do through the agency, they can give you another course.
Mm-hmm.
So many students, they totally lose their money because they were doing business directly with the schools.
And when you found out that the school had closed, how did you feel after being told that you had nothing to worry about?
Betrayed.
Betrayed?
Yeah, because they ensured me that the school was not going to close.
Mm-hmm.
But it did, and I didn't really see it coming because the school was working perfectly, all the teachers going to work, and normally all the staff, everyone going to work normally.
Yeah.
I really didn't see it coming.
I'm Grecia from Bolivia.
And when did you start in MEC?
In MEC, in 21st of March, I paid 900. Yes.
Okay, so you asked them, were they going to close? And they said, no, everything is fine. And 3 weeks later, they closed.
Yeah.
And how did you find out that the school had closed? Did you get a notification about it closing?
No, I didn't get anything. I just was, Facebook.
Yeah.
Everything.
So what happened to your 900 euro? Did you get your money back?
No, nothing.
No?
Nothing.
And did any other school take you on to give you classes?
Well, I was looking for one school. They wanted I pay more. Like 800, they want to pay 800 for 6 months because I told them I didn't have any classes, just 1 week of class. Mm-hmm. I had, and I wanted to study. I want because I'm here for studying, and they said no, you have to pay 800, and I said no, I already paid like 900. After that, I was feeling like stupid. Because I had some friends, they said, oh, it's okay, Grace, no problem, you're not close, Mac. Another friend, they said, Grecia, be careful, be careful, be careful. Go to another school. And I heard no one could get the money back.
No one?
No one. I heard, until now, I heard that.
What were you feeling about the English language industry when the school closed?
I was feeling like they don't have control about the school. I was thinking that because it's impossible. How you can't control the school? How you can't get back your money? No. Who is the owner from the school? What they don't do nothing to this guy or man, whatever. Who this guy? Who this person? What they don't do nothing? I was thinking.
One Venezuelan couple, who were already having major problems with money exchange, faced even more difficulties when the school they had desperately saved up money for closed down suddenly, leaving them with no money and no school for a second time in the short space of 5 months in Ireland.
I'm Veronica, I'm from Venezuela.
My name is Jan, I am from Venezuela. Well, when we first arrived in Ireland, we were very anxious because we don't know how to live in this country with another language. We just want to learn English, go to school, live in Ireland, enjoy Ireland. But we couldn't at the beginning because we got a lot of trouble with money and we closed in schools and everything like that.
What happened then with your money? You said you had trouble with money. So what was that about?
In my country, we have a very complex system of exchange rate. And I paid my bolivares, the currency of my country, bolivares. And the government, the National Bank, never changed my money. So when I arrived to Dublin, the government say in my country, people who are studying English is not really important for our country. So we don't want to change your money.
The trouble with money was really hard because we didn't get any money. We're supposed to pay the school before we arrive here. But the government said, you can go to Ireland and when you arrive there, we can transfer the money to your school and you can start the classes. But that never happened. We only had 3 months to collect the money and pay to another college. And we only find this college for 600 euros. And we had to work really hard because without English, you can find job somewhere. So we have to make something different or something to help yourself. Then in my case, I was washing cars.
I was working as a nanny for around 3 months. And then I paid my school with 600. It was a good idea for me because it was really cheap. But then they just closed down.
So you arrived in Ireland. You couldn't get your money from Venezuela. You had to work doing jobs where you didn't require English because you couldn't speak English.
Exactly.
To save your money for your course. So before you left Venezuela, did you know which English college you wanted to study at?
Yes.
And which college did you choose?
We choose a college called ULEAR College.
ULEAR.
But we never studied there.
And you never studied
yes,
there.
Yes, and for this reason, we have to change the college because you learned for 2 years ago, the price was around 2,000, more or less.
Okay.
And then when I was reading about English in Dublin, the school which is closed down now, just 600 for 1 year.
Okay.
We trust in that college.
They just said, I know what happened with Venezuelan people. We can help.
Yeah.
But they never told us that they were going to be closed.
When we met the other day, you talked about your brother. Your brother had to go back to Venezuela. Was that right?
Yes.
What happened with him?
He
came over with you originally?
Yes.
The three of you came together?
Together.
Yeah.
I remember he was working as a gardener in English in Dublin.
Okay.
The college. But the person who...
Who was in charge.
Yes. Yeah. She never paid my brother, never.
No, I mean, she paid the first week, maybe, and then the second week she paid only the half work done.
Okay.
And then she started to tell him, I will pay you next week, I will pay you next week. And that happened, and he lost almost 1,500 euros.
Oh, my God.
So that was the money to survive, to pay again the other college.
She said, this is really unfair.
Yeah.
This doesn't work for me. I prefer come back.
How long did you study in English in Dublin?
Around 1.5 months.
Okay.
Yes.
And how did you find out that the school had closed?
One day I went to my school and the door was closed.
The door was closed outside. And in front of the door there is a paper.
Yeah.
And they said... The building is being remodelation. I don't know.
Okay, it's being renovated.
Renovated.
Yeah.
And you are allowed to 2 weeks holidays, and then you can come back. But that
never
happened.
Yeah,
they never opened. So it was so strange.
Yeah.
Then we realized that the same letter that they put in that door was the same letter that other colleges, which closed down, put in the door. We asked for our money back, and we went to immigration. We went to all the organizations.
Did you go to ICOS?
ICOS,
yes.
And even ASELS, they said, no, your money is gone.
It's gone. Yes.
Yeah.
After English in Dublin closed, you had no money to pay for another course. So what did you do then?
In immigration, they give us the opportunity to renew another course without certificate, without the other certificate. So,
so they did help you a little bit. Yeah.
The country helped.
Really
you,
grateful
yeah.
with
yeah.
this country about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we start working. Just to collect the money to pay again for the other course. That was our mission.
Yeah.
I went to Clonard. I was working as a nanny.
Yeah.
But really heavy because I was working in the farm.
Oh my God.
Yes. And it was really difficult for me because almost 24/7, you know.
Yeah.
I was working heavy, difficult work.
Yeah.
And for 8 months.
8 months.
Yes.
Could you imagine 8 months just working inside a house? Mm. And our mission was improve our English here. And that was 8 months then could be studying English.
Yeah.
You know, my job was washing dishes, kitchen porter. Everybody knows that it's really, really hard job. And my hands just was really, really bad. Yeah, I was having a really bad time.
Yeah. Okay. So then you managed to save up some more money to pay for another course. Yeah.
Yes, we did.
And which school did you go to then?
We chose Cedar College.
Cedar College.
It's in Capel Street.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a new college, but it's really good college. And we are now in our holidays.
Holidays.
In our official holidays.
The 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. We have to renew again to another course.
And you enjoyed your course in Cedar College?
Yes. Yes, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah?
Yes,
we did. It was really helpful. I mean,
That
was the only college who allow us to improve our English, and this is my English now. So this is the English I supposed to have before.
Maybe one year ago.
Yeah, one year ago.
Uh-huh.
But this is the English I have now. Thanks for Seda, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks to Seda, but thanks. No thanks to the other.
No.
Because the other one.
Yeah, this is the level of English that I supposed to have 1 year ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most of the students spoke of an organisation called ICOS that helped them in the aftermath of their school's closing. Dave Moore, from that organisation, explains what ICOS's role was in this scandal.
So I'm Dave Moore from the Irish Council for International Students.
And what is the Irish Council of International Students? What is their role?
Well, we're a very small non-profit organisation, and essentially we're concerned with the rights and well-being of international students who've chosen to come and study in Ireland. At the time we're speaking about, I was Programmes and Communications Officer with ICOS and very much on the front line of responding to a succession of college closures.
What did you do when the schools first started closing down?
Essentially, it was a case of myself getting down there as quickly as possible, obviously fending a lot of questions and you know, it was a very emotionally charged atmosphere as people started wondering, you know, what would come of the money they'd paid. We unfortunately had to break the news to student after student that even in a liquidation situation, it was actually very, very unlikely that they would receive any money returned to them. Students just couldn't understand why their hopes and their money had seemed to evaporate and that there was no protection for them. The reason that was the case is because there was a general absence of something called learner protection, which is a way of ensuring that students' fees would be kept safe in the event of a closure. So either they would receive the equivalent of what they lost with another college, or they would receive a refund of the fees for what they lost. That became a key issue in the context of all these closures. The whole situation predating the closures came about precisely because the eye was really off the ball in terms of the whole regulation of a sector. Really, anyone could open a college.
Yeah.
And then that same anyone could walk away from the mess and leave students picking up the tab. It is an attractive business model, perhaps, for people who look at things in that way. I mean, what we found in every instance was a group of people who wanted to learn, a group of committed staff. But when you've got that kind of operation, it's very, very easy then to sign up additional people. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of complete shells was a misnomer, but the ability for a college with space for 100 students to magically have 900 visa registered students was certainly there.
Could you remember any particularly bad cases?
What happened following a closure, because students weren't going to get their money back, they weren't going to get offered alternate classes anywhere else, they were easy prey then for other colleges that would offer them a place for cheap. But if all you've got can put together is a few hundred euro, then what do you do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just so many desperate stories in the midst of all of this. Yeah.
Yeah. After all this happened, immigration introduced some new measures to protect the schools and to prevent something like this happening again. Could you tell us what some of the new measures were that were introduced to help protect the students?
After the summer in September, there was the first announcement of plans for how things would be reformed. And they involved some changes to holiday periods. The other big proposal was that there would be a new replacement list of courses and colleges eligible for visas. English language colleges would need to have the ACELS quality assurance to be eligible for this list. That plan unfortunately fell by the wayside because it was successfully challenged in court. So the reforms then kind of needed a rethink alongside a revisiting of this list was to make it a requirement that for a course to be on that list, a student would have to have learner protection. Now, that has not been tested. The key thing that needs to be done is delivery on what really was first started being spoken about in, I think, 2009, which is the introduction of a quality mark. Unfortunately, the timeline for that has stretched out and stretched out such that we're not there yet, and perhaps it's still some while yet before we will be. But I think it's only really when that model is in place and fully implemented that it'd be right to say we've arrived at the destination. At the moment, what we've got is important reforms to hold the situation until the much more overarching reforms come in.
We are still waiting on an overall quality mark for English language schools. Journalist Mark Tai explains.
Well, there's talk of introducing this IEM, it's International Education. Like ASELS is a mess at the moment, just not through their own fault maybe, but just because of the legislation. You know, like the High Court has said, you know, they've no legislative power in terms of, you know, compelling schools to meet their criteria and their regulations. So the fact that this is 2 years on and, you know, it's definitely been low on the agenda, I think, of the Department of Education and Justice to get in, sit down and say, what do we need to do here? At the moment, it's somewhere between no-touch regulation and light-touch regulation.
What does the future hold for the English language industry and for the students affected by the closures? When will there be a proper quality assurance mark for schools? Are the schools being monitored more closely? What is being done to prevent this from happening again? And what has happened to the students' money? Kevin O'Sullivan of Innes.
As a result of the closures and some of the things we found going on in the industry, you would be aware, I think, that there were two sets of reform proposals carried out. And key elements of the most recent one in May of last year were introduction of learner protection. Mm-hmm. But also what we've been doing is the interim list of eligible programmes is the new list of courses for which we will give immigration permission. And as part of the process for getting on that list, we will look at documentation from the school and we will inspect a certain number of colleges on the ground as well. Now, it's not a full quality assurance process. This can't be confused with quality or quality assurance. What we're looking at is saying is, does the college operation meet certain minimum requirements that would allow us to say, well, look, we should give immigration permission to a student coming here?
And when the international education mark is introduced, will that include quality insurance and an immigration aspect as well?
Well, I think to some degree, the international education mark is really going to concentrate on the quality aspects. We would regard for immigration purposes that when the international education mark is fully in place and everybody has had an opportunity of being assessed and apply for it, is that we would regard the international education mark as a prerequisite for getting on whatever list we have in place at that time for immigration purposes.
Okay.
However, having the international education mark of itself wouldn't be a guarantee. So the IEM is a valuable part of the process for the immigration part, but the processes are separate. But certainly having the IEM is a major component of an overall decision whether or not to grant somebody a listing for immigration purposes.
And do you know why the IEM has been delayed? It was originally supposed to start in January 2016.
No, I mean, it's not our baby, really, in that sense. That's, a quality assurance process for the educational authorities.
Sue, when do you think the IEM will be introduced? It was supposed to be introduced this year. Mm-hmm. Do you know when it's going to be introduced?
We said our last announcement and our last understanding was this year, and certainly we would really have liked it to be introduced this year. It would simply make the sector and the whole environment around all of this much easier for everybody, primarily the learner. Mm-hmm. However, that would appear to be unlikely at currently. We're waiting for amendments from the department. We are now saying we have made a contingency plan to take us to the end of 2018.
Okay, have you increased the amount of inspections that you've done, unannounced inspections that you have done since this happened?
The short answer is yes. So typically we might have done maybe not more than 20 monitoring inspections in years prior to 2012, whereas now we're doing a much higher number. We do also do inspections of schools that we simply haven't been into for a long time. So we are trying to maintain a relationship with that school, at least reflecting a 3 or 4 year period. We encourage schools to have their own internal auditing system. Self-assessment would be a key facet of our regulations, along with feedback from students, feedback from clients, etc., and being able to demonstrate how you're responding to that.
Declan De Lacy, who is working with the liquidation process of some of the schools, talks about how it is progressing 2 years on.
I was appointed as liquidator to IBS College, to the Carlisle Institute, to the BCT Institute, and very briefly to Eden College.
Okay, and what's the current situation with the schools that are in the process of liquidation?
Well, I can only speak for the schools that I've been appointed as liquidator of. They're not simple jobs. They're likely to be time-consuming. They've already been time-consuming, and they're likely to take a little bit more time. It's very difficult to say with any certainty what the outcome of them will be.
How likely is it, when the liquidations are finished, that any of the students will receive money that they lost?
Well, that really depends on the total amounts that we're able to realise in any given case. So what we can get in from the assets and what the proceeds of any litigation ultimately transpire to be. And whilst the first part of that is quite clear at the moment, the second part remains very much uncertain. So it's difficult to say, but certainly in some cases there are no assets, and it's very difficult to anticipate there being any money left for unsecured creditors, including students, after the costs of the liquidation and the preferential creditors, so that the revenue, the employees and so on, after they're paid. So in some cases, there doesn't seem to be much hope that there will be any funds available for students. I'd certainly hope that in one or two cases that there will be.
Without much hope of recovering their money, what are the students' hopes for the future? What are you doing at the moment? You've been here for almost three years. And what do you plan on doing? Are you going to go back to Brazil, or would you like to stay here?
I'd like to stay.
Yeah?
But not as a student anymore.
Not as a student,
no,
yeah.
No, it's 3 years studying English.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's a long time, yeah. What I'm trying to do now is getting my citizenship.
Citizenship?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have European blood somewhere?
Italian.
Italian?
Italian, yeah.
Okay. And what is your plan then, Grecia?
Back to Brazil, because I live in Brazil.
So you'll hopefully get a good job now with your level of English in Brazil.
I hope so. No, I hope so.
So what have you been doing since you finished school?
Then I decided to stay here and do college.
What are you studying at the moment?
IT.
And are you happy with your college now?
Yeah, now, yeah. This college is from the government,
mm-hmm.
and it's way more safe than an average English school. They're not looking for profit itself.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend coming to Ireland to your friends at home after your experience?
Yes, I would recommend to everyone, if you want, you have to do, because everyone has your experience, bad things and good things.
Would you have any advice for other students coming to Ireland?
But before pay anything, make sure you have a contract.
A contract with an agency.
Yeah, make sure you have someone to argue with if something happens. Don't buy direct to the school.
What advice would you give to somebody coming to Ireland to study English?
So we always try to see people who had studied in the school before or who were studying in school at the moment to ask how the school was. And the price is a big thing, but knowing that the school won't close is bigger.
How would you describe your experience in Ireland?
Ireland is very good because Dublin is a great city. Like, I'm from São Paulo, which is a huge city. And then here you can just cycle everywhere, you can just walk everywhere, and this is something that is amazing. So Dublin is a great city. It definitely changed my mind in terms of quality of life or what I really want.
Did you regret at the time coming to Ireland because the school closed?
No, I didn't. I didn't regret coming here because it was my plan. So if it happened, it could have happened with other people and in a different country. We never know.
What did you feel about Ireland when you couldn't get your money and the school closed and everything happened?
About Ireland, I never feel bad or furious.
Yeah.
Never. And I feel furious about my government, my country.
Yeah.
And with the people who closed down the college.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to stay in Ireland. I really like, love Ireland. I think Ireland is a country who give me the opportunity. It's really difficult, this situation about visa, about college. But if you see the positive way, this is just for improve your person.
Yeah.
Ireland is a country which offer you a lot of opportunities and you can enjoy this beautiful country. I mean, it's so green. Some people say gray. I must say green.
Green,
it's really green. It's beautiful. And I really enjoy Ireland and I absolutely recommend all of my friends to come here.
How have your attitudes towards Ireland or the language school industry changed since the school closed down? Did you feel differently about Ireland or about your experience here after it closed down?
No, not actually, because something that happened here, but it could have happened in any other country.
Okay.
But
so
I just think Ireland, the school industry is unprotected now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there is an efficient organ that can control and really take care of that for now.
Mm-hmm.
I hope something come up in the future.
Yeah, so you didn't regret coming to Ireland at all?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I really like it. Because I actually like the weather here.
You like the weather here?
I find Brazil very hot where I am from.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't miss the heat at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Despite their misfortune with their school suddenly closing down, the students still recommend coming to Ireland to study English. It still seems to offer the most attractive deal in comparison to other English-speaking countries, with its casual work and study visa, with the work aspect originally giving rise to many of the problems that resulted in the school closures. However, since we are still awaiting official quality assurance for the industry, the advice from many of the students is most definitely to still come to Ireland, but be very careful when it comes to choosing the school. In fact, in early September 2016, while this documentary was in production, another school closed its doors. More than a year after the last school had shut, Dublin School of English, which had been operating for almost 50 years, closed, citing the difficulties of running a legitimate English school due to years of mismanagement of the industry by the Department of Education and INIS. As the students said, it could have happened anywhere, but it happened here. And until we have proper quality assurance, it's likely to happen again and again. This documentary was produced by Sarah Jane Fortune with support from Near FM and funding from the Mary Raftery Investigative Journalism Fund. Many thanks to everyone who contributed to the production.